Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Chapter 39. Pleasant View. When Mrs. Eddy left Boston in the summer of 1889 and went to Concord seeking the refuge of her native hills in which to work out the strangely mixed problems that confronted her, Concord took little note of her coming. As has been seen, most of those who had known her in the days of her youth or young womanhood had passed away or had joined in the great national movement westward and found new homes in new states. The old familiar landmarks were still there. The old elm on North State Street, under which, as a child, she used to play on Sundays between the morning and afternoon services when her father drove in with the family from Bow. The building in which Franklin Pierce had his office. The winding road to Sandbutton Bridge. The straight stretches and great bends of the Merrimack, and the hills and brooks of Bow, amid which she and Andrew Galt had taken things so seriously when she was all of 15 and Andrew not quite 20. A new Concord was to open for her in the future, a Concord wherein she was to be reckoned a leading citizen. But when she rented a house there in the summer of 1889 at 62 State Street, the townsfolk took little notice of it. She was already a well-known and greatly loved, or greatly opposed, woman to thousands of people throughout the country and beyond its borders. But Concord, through many years, had been used to hearing strange stories out of Boston and gave little heed to them. This was exactly what this tired, much enduring woman needed. With the faithful Calvin Fry and Foster Eddy to help her, she could carry on her work vigorously and yet be free in a measure from the 1,001 intrusions which threatened at times to overwhelm her in Boston. It was in Concord that she worked out her plan to pull down her organization, and it was here in Concord that she laid the foundation for its rebuilding. Through the first 2 years of her retirement, she lived in the house on State Street, and then one day in the spring of 1892, in the course of one of the daily drives she allowed herself, she found at a point about a mile and a half west of the city on Pleasant Street, at that distance a country road again, an old farmhouse for sale. It stood not far from the road, on a little knoll, whence the view southward was along a narrow valley, at the end of which rose the gentle green hills of Bow, one above the other, their sides covered, as she always remembered them, with fields and woodlands. She seemed to have decided there and then that that was where she wanted to live. And within a short time, she had bought the house and the land that went with it. It was a more important move than appeared on the surface. In the troubled times that followed, and thereafter for many years, 17 in all, Pleasant View, as Mrs. Eddy called her new possession, was for her a haven of refuge, without which it might have been impossible for her to do what she did do. Concord was just far enough from Boston so that anyone would think twice, especially in those days, about making the journey, and yet near enough to be accessible within a few hours. Moreover, Pleasant View afforded her, particularly at first when she was rebuilding the house and planning the garden, a relaxation and diversion she greatly needed. And she certainly went to it with a will. The original house was quite small and commonplace, but Mrs. Eddy added bow windows and wide verandas, built a porte cochere at the front of the house, and a tower room with a balcony at the southeast corner, whence the best view of the hills and valleys was to be had. Later on, she bought more land, built a gardener's cottage, stables, and outbuildings. She sought privacy, but always seems to have had a strong objection to anything that looked like seclusion. There were no high fences around Pleasant View. The hedges were kept low and neatly trimmed, while the lawns and gaily stocked flower beds were always plainly visible from the road. The project occasioned tremendous interest among her students and followers everywhere. In that mysterious way, common in such cases, whereby information is spread abroad, word of what Mrs. Eddy was doing reached the most distant parts of the field, as the wide spread of the movement was coming to be called, and Mrs. Eddy began to receive gifts, large and small, for her new home. Among these, perhaps the most interesting, because it gave rise to one of her most important shorter writings, was the gift by a group of students of a little pond for her garden. It is still there, fed, as always, by two or three small springs and such surface waters as seep in from the hillside. Not to be outdone, another group, this time in Toronto, Canada, sent her a boat for the pond. And the little boathouse that was built for it was long one of the features in the grounds of Pleasant View. To the donors, she wrote, "Across lakes into a kingdom, I reach out my hand to clasp yours." But if Pleasant View tended to become more and more of an establishment, Mrs. Eddy continued to maintain the simplicity which had always characterized her life. She rose at 6 in the summer and 7 in the winter, and after breakfast usually walked for a while, either pacing up and down the veranda at the back of the house, or if the day was fair, strolling with some of her household round the little pond or along the paths through the trees beyond it. She loved her garden and delighted in doing things that others thought impossible, like moving trees in summer or having things planted too late or too early, and seeing them come to perfection just the same. There was something, at times, almost pathetic in her love for flowers and natural beauty. It had been one of the great passions of her childhood, and one of her sternest condemnations was directed against a misinterpretation of her teaching which sought to make little of physical beauty. To take all Earth's beauty into one gulp of vacuity and label beauty nothing is ignorantly to caricature God's creation, which is unjust to human sense and to the divine realism. Earth is more spiritually beautiful to my gaze now than when it was more earthly to the eyes of Eve. There was always something behind her indulgence. She might sit for an hour or more at a time in the dusk of summer evening, doing nothing apparently, but watch the light fade from the hills. But it would be found next day by her household that she had not spent her time in dreamy absentness, as she would express it, but had something very concrete to show for her apparent idleness. Improving moments before they pass into hours was a practice she only urged upon others after she had applied it rigorously to herself. And so, at the time of the dedication of the church and her brief visit to Boston, as described in the preceding chapter, the daily round at Pleasant View had settled into definite ways. All her life, Mrs. Eddy had been punctual in the true meaning of that word. She accounted it just as much unpunctual to be too early as too late. She always had a clock where she could see it, and especially in later life, she insisted that there should be a time for everything, and everything should have its time. She seems to have felt very keenly that the more the essentials of the day's work could be reduced to a routine, the freer were she and those around her to do what she regarded as their real work, to pray without ceasing, in the widest meaning of that injunction. At Pleasant View, as afterwards at Chestnut Hill, meals were always served to the minute, and every member of the household was expected to be on time. Dinner was in the middle of the day, and after dinner, punctually every day at 2 o'clock, Mrs. Eddy went for a drive. Year by year, as she became more and more of a public figure, Concord people looked forward to seeing her. And one of the regular daily incidents in the city's daily life was the appearance of Mrs. Eddy's carriage on State Street with its pair of well-groomed horses, and Calvin Fry in livery on the box seat. Mrs. Eddy was now becoming a wealthy woman. She had ceased to teach, but the circulation of her book, Science and Health, was rapidly increasing. With the closing out of the 1891 edition, over 150,000 copies had been sold, while later royalties paid to her amounted to approximately $12,000 in 1893, $15,000 in 1894, and $18,000 in 1895. But no matter how much riches increased, Mrs. Eddy never relaxed anything of her almost rugged simplicity. She was the recipient of many gifts, but she spent little on herself, and the furnishings of Pleasant View, although comfortable, were far from luxurious. Her writing was still her chief work, Besides her articles for the journal, her constant literary labor was the revision of Science and Health. There had been a new edition in 1891 and another in 1894, and at the time the church was dedicated, she was hard at work on yet another edition, which was brought out in 1896. Generally speaking, the trend of each succeeding edition is towards simplicity. Apt quotations from other writers, whether in prose or verse, which in the earlier editions were used so freely as chapter headings or embodied in the text, are curtailed or eliminated, while now a sentence or now a paragraph is rewritten in order to elucidate her meaning. The great work in 1895, and the first of the many far-reaching developments to come out of Pleasant View, was the compiling of the Church Manual. Rules and regulations governing the Mother Church had been promulgated and adopted from time to time as occasion demanded, but by 1895 they had become so numerous that some form of codification was clearly demanded. It had always been Mrs. Eddy's custom to originate these rules and then send them to the board of directors with orders that they be officially adopted. Now the need was for a systematic marshaling of the various controls in a convenient and comprehensive booklet. And so, early in the summer of that year, the first members, at Mrs. Eddy's direction, appointed a committee of four to go into the matter and prepare the church manual. The committee appointed consisted of four well-tried workers, namely Edward P. Bates, Julia Bartlett, Judge Hanna, and William B. Johnson. They got to work at once, and within a few months, the first edition of the Church Manual made its appearance. Mrs. Eddy changed it, adding or deleting up to the year of her death, but its broad provisions remained the same. It set forth the scope within which the directors should act, the provisions governing the constituent departments and agencies of the Mother Church, and the terms under which branch churches might be formed. It provided for discipline, how and in what circumstances it should be applied, promulgated the terms of membership, and published in full the deeds and other documents relating to the founding of the church. Strictly speaking, the manual was binding only on actual members of the Mother Church. But as it became the almost universal practice for branch churches to adopt bylaws embodying the essential features of the manual, the manual quickly became a code of conduct for church members everywhere. How Mrs. Eddy viewed the matter is not easy to say. It is quite clear that from the moment she concluded the age was not ready to do without a visible church, and decided that her own church should be reorganized, she determined that she was going to safeguard it in every way possible, not only from false doctrine, but from the dissensions which had characterized so disastrously the early days of its history. Nevertheless, It is, again, clear from her statements in regard to the manual at the time of its first publication, and also later, that she viewed it, as she did her church, as a concession to the period. In replying to the acclaim which some years later greeted the appearance of a new edition, Mrs. Eddy left no doubt as to her position. "Will those beloved students," she wrote in the journal, "whose growth is taking in the Ten Commandments and scaling the steep ascent of Christ's Sermon on the Mount, accept profound thanks for their swift messages of rejoicing over the 20th century church manual? Heaps upon heaps of praise confront me. And for what? That which I said in my heart would never be needed, namely, laws of limitation for a Christian Scientist." At another time, as though defending herself and her actions against any possible charge of autocracy, she insisted that the rules and bylaws of the Mother Church were written at different dates and as the occasion required. They sprang from necessity, the logic of events, from the immediate demand for them as a help that must be supplied to maintain the dignity and defense of our cause. And so she went forward, her patience often tried by the fact that she was compelled to take half measures, where the full measure alone would have fulfilled her hope, and to take the course nearest right, when she herself knew that in the long run it would have to be abandoned. More and more was she led to make "Suffer it to be so now," her daily prayer. But Pleasant View was a great comfort to her. Although beset on all hands, as has been seen by those who sought her aid and counsel, or made claims upon her time for less worthy reasons, Mrs. Eddy, nevertheless, as time went on, succeeded in securing for herself some measure of the quiet she so earnestly desired. 3 periods every day she devoted to prayer and meditation, and at these times she was never disturbed. It was all much simpler at Pleasant View than it had been anywhere else. Calvin Fry, always faithful, stood guard. He sometimes made mistakes, denying people who ought not to have been denied, and admitting people who ought not to have been admitted. But on the whole, he did a work that perhaps nobody else could have done. The faults of his virtues must often have tried Mrs. Eddy to the uttermost, as they did, without doubt, many of her household. But Mrs. Eddy, in appraising him, would come back again and again with a sense of gratitude, and returning peace to his one outstanding virtue that seemed to have no fault: his faithfulness. Whoever else fell away, Calvin Fry always remained. Pleasant View, without Calvin, would not have been Pleasant View.